Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. Today's edition of the Seniors is brought to you by our friends at Heartland Flags. You can check them out online at heartlandflags.com. Had somebody ask me on Twitter the other day if there was any coupon codes or anything along those lines that they could use here between our partnership with Heartland Flags. And the Heartland Flags Twitter account fired back with a response that I thought was perfect. And they said, we don't need that because our prices are already the lowest around. And that is 100% true. You can get any flag for any occasion. Doesn't matter if it's sports, if it's holidays. Doesn't matter. They've got them all for you. And I see Rob Gray looking at them right now. You can check out all of their selection at heartlandflags.com or check out their showroom at 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines. Or you could give them a call, 515-282-7603. What's up, Rob Gray?
Really nice cardinal flag here. Kind of hits your Cyclones and my love of birds at the same time.
And your love for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, right. Something like that. I've always respected the Cardinals, as you know. So they were the anti-Cubs for a long time, and then the Cubs finally broke through. So the Cubs, a little bit less anti-Cubs since they finally won a World Championship, a World Series for the first time in forever.
They did?
They did. It's kind of amazing, given, you know, all that's been going on everywhere in every sort of way, and it's kind of lost in the shuffle. Not for me, though.
Yeah, believe me, I forgot all about it, Rob. I forgot all about the Cubs were the world champions. So Iowa State taking on West Virginia tomorrow night. You want to start with basketball?
Is that what we? Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I figured we were going to start there. But coming off the loss to Vanderbilt on Saturday, I assume you watched the game.
I did.
What were your impressions? It seemed like it was one of those games where you look at the stat sheet and it's like there's only two categories here where Vanderbilt really exploited them. One, the free throw line, yep. And two, their ability to hit shots from deep. It was like a 17-point swing in that way. And I think Iowa State, I mean, they made more field goals. They shot a better percent from the field. They just weren't able to get it done on three-point defense and keeping them off the free throw line.
Yeah, the threes, and I Chris mentioned leading up to it, and you might have as well, just matchup-wise. Yes, it's a 9-11 team, but it is a team that they had lost five of six games, as I noted, but the win had been at Florida, and we saw how good Florida is with what they did in Norman.
That's one of those teams that when their three-point ball is falling, they're going to be able to beat or play with anybody.
And had Kentucky beat.
But when
much.
It's not falling, and they'll probably go through long stretches of, like, they'll have games where it doesn't go in.
Yep.
And that's when you'll see them get beat by, you know, in Arkansas, where they just went cold at the end of the game. Arkansas was able to get back into that one.
Or,
that I don't, by no means do I think that is like a bad team.
No. They have so many good shooters. I mean, in a way, they're sort of like Iowa State with a little bit more size in that way, other than, you know, the clear difference is they're generally a slow, calculated offense working it for that shot versus a team that wants to turn it up and get in transition. But, you know, it's bad in the sense that you'd establish some momentum. You're 5-3 in the league, but that didn't change. You hold serve, you get to at least 10-8 in the league, and you're comfortably in the big dance, and I think the Cyclones can do that. But again, very concerning, the avalanche of points that Vandy put on them when the defense just wasn't there. I mean, I think that's what's concerning, because there have been games where the defense has kind of kept the Cyclones in when the offense is really plotting. And in this game, man, when the offense went south, so did the defense in that stretch of 40-16 or whatever it was after they got up 11. So, but every game is not a season, as much as some people want it to be. And I expect this team to come up fired up and executing much better on both ends when the number 8 Mountaineers roll into Ames tomorrow night.
I think the thing that makes it so frustrating, this is kind of what I wrote about after the game, is that you don't really even know what to expect from them from one possession to the other. And it's not even like, okay, one possession of offense to the next possession of offense. No, I literally mean like one possession of offense go play defense. You play pretty well on defense. You come back to offense. You play pretty well there. Then you go back on defense, and then it's just awful. Yeah. And so they give up wide open shots, or someone gets to the end of the lane there's no resistance whatsoever. And I think that's just what makes it so frustrating. Yeah. You know? Or they'll have a possession on offense where they really got the ball whipping around, and you can see they really have the other team scrambling. And then the next time they'll come down and they'll stand there with the ball. And it's just like, come on, like, let's just get, let's get a style, get an identity, and let's stick to it, not switching back and forth between a number of different things.
Yeah, and the communication, it seems, is really lacking in those situations. Like when you get, as you mentioned, somebody wide open attacking the lane and nobody rotates down for help, and you see guys looking at each other and going, mm-hmm. What? That's got to be cleaned up in a big way if they're going to make the type of run that they need to make to be in a good position to, finish strong upper half Big 12, maybe have a pretty good Big 12 tournament and go on from there into the most important part of March.
What do you think about Solomon Young not playing? Especially with the way – I mean, Daryl Bewley played 14 minutes, didn't score a point, didn't grab a rebound.
Yeah, it's I don't really understand – what the rhyme or reason is. And we don't know what's happening behind closed doors too, on and off the court. And that's not to say that anything bad is happening one way or the other. But seems like he's been reasonably productive when he's on the floor. And I would think you'd want to at least have that carrot out there that, hey, we're going to give you a shot here in this stretch, whether it be between media timeouts or whatever, and see what happens. That's a head scratcher. And I know it's hair pulling type stuff for fans, not being able to, to see a pattern there, because it doesn't really exist. But, I don't know if, maybe practice wasn't going as well with them, but clearly he can be a productive guy and he can do some good things. So hopefully he's back in that big man rotation Tuesday and from there.
I think that Saturday proved my theory about the SEC Big 12 Challenge, that sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks.
We're both with that, and we couldn't get a point. Remember on Thursday?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how many road teams won, but it wasn't very many.
Yeah,
Baylor did. And that might be it.
Did Auburn
Kansas
win at TCU?
Kansas won at TCU.
So we had four. But, I mean, yeah, it's such a weird thing to drop at this time.
Yeah.
And, I mean – And the idea that it is a disruption, it absolutely is. I mean, even though you can just look at it as another, almost like it as another conference game, it's still a team you're unfamiliar with. It's an arena you're unfamiliar with in most cases.
Well, yeah, especially for a team like Iowa State that's got to go to Vanderbilt, play in that weird gym against a team that all they do is fire up threes. I mean, they shot more than 50% of their shots were from three. It was like 58% of their shots.
Mm-hmm. And some of those guys have great length. I mean, the 7-1 Cornette, I mean – how are you going to – you can close out all you want on that, but, when you're 6'8", against that type of length, he's going to get it up.
Well, and especially he's a guy that can shoot it from three. So it's not like there's been times where they've kind of been able to sag back with that guy defensively, but they couldn't do that because I think he shot 9 3-pointers.
Yeah, and he made a good number of them too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just that was a really tough team to face. And it, I thought going in it was going to be a bad matchup for Iowa State, but I didn't expect them to hit 13 of 33s.
Yeah. I expected the Cyclones to pull it off, but I agree that it was absolutely going to be a tough game. And I mean, that stretch still boggles the mind how anybody outscores that team with the players they have 40-16 in any stretch. Mm-hmm. It's just, that can't happen. I mean, there's got to be a way to turn off that spigot that's flowing against you. And unfortunately, in that game, it didn't happen.
All right. Like you mentioned previously, Press Virginia come to town tomorrow. My boy Bob will be here, obviously.
Do you think his stool has its own, seat on the plane?
I feel like it has some kind of special case.
Perhaps. Yeah, that would
be great. I want to see them bring it out,
It's like a velvet-lined case, and then you open it up like a fine guitar or violin.
I saw Heisman Trophy winner Johnny Rogers came to Shenandoah back when I was in high school.
Mm, yeah.
And he had a velvet-lined case that his Heisman went in, and he said he kept it in the back of his car all the time. So let's just hope that Johnny Rogers never gets his car never gets broken into because then his Heisman will be gone.
Yeah.
But that's what I imagine. Bob Huggins' stool goes in the same kind of – they probably each have a case guy, you know, my case guy.
Like Rhodes had a headset guy. Paul Rhodes had a headset guy. He's got a case guy. I like
if
that.
If the case breaks, it's like, oh, okay, I got to call my case guy.
Morgantown's finest case guy. But, I mean, what a – how well he's adapted his team to the Big 12, you know, with that pressing style. And he's got the right pieces, the right guys to do it. I think they're averaging 22.7 turnovers forced, 11 more than the opposition on average every game. Yeah. And, yeah, some of that's padded by games against Mississippi Valley State, but they're doing it against everybody too. And Iowa State's been good in that regard. I think, you know, forcing close to 16 turnovers or something like that. But it's a whole different ball game. Fortunately, these guys have faced it many times. Amonte's faced it many times, and Naz has, Matt has. So you've got guys with experience with it and the home crowd. You'd like to think it's a nice rebound and you can get to 6-3 in the Big 12, but it's going to be hard, and they can make up points in a hurry, as they've done in Ames in the past at times.
I feel like Iowa State matches up well with West Virginia. Just this particular Iowa State team, with how well they take care of the ball, this doesn't seem like one that the press is going to phase them very much.
Yeah, I agree. Particularly after a game at Vandy where they didn't take care of the ball as well as they usually do. I'm not saying law of averages, but I guess I am saying law of averages. That's not going to happen back-to-back for Iowa State, regardless of the press. And I think they'll find, you know, they're going to be forced to play fast in a sense, which is kind of what they wanted. I expect a big game from, say, Deontay Burton. I'd expect a big game from one of the other big guys running the floor, whichever of the three, you know, sees the most minutes and is most productive on both ends. But I don't like the matchup in Morgantown because of how tough they are there, but I certainly do in Ames. I think the Cyclones could really get it rolling with a good start and one in which they, again, don't fall into the type of funk they did in Nashville.
We'll be breaking down the West Virginia press tomorrow on CFTV Live at 12:15. Myself and Adam Gray, just so you know.
Fantastic.
In case you want to tune in, Rob. I know you want to get educated, so.
Well, I'm all in for education, man.
Do you think people are ready to see Jevon Carter not be in the Big 12 anymore?
I think so. I mean, I was remarking earlier how George Niang seemed to opposing fan bases. This guy, it seems like he's been here since the first year they were in the league.
It actually seems like every player on their team has.
Like Phillip.
I was watching them this weekend. Yeah, it's like Tariq Phillip, Daxter Miles. Yeah, I think he's like a sophomore, and it seems like he's been playing for West Virginia every year. Nathan Adrian, you know, I think he's gone through 20 different hairstyles since he played for the Mountaineers.
Yeah, and now Phillip coming off the bench. That's a really, really, really good sixth man. I mean, shoots it. He's not shooting it at super high percentage from deep, but pretty good, about 38%. I mean, what a nice, balanced, rounded team. You know, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys in double-digit minutes.
Asa Ahmad.
Yeah, another guy.
Elijah Macon. Yeah. Yep. All those guys have just played a lot of minutes in the Big 12.
Yep. And, I mean, it perfectly suits their style. I mean, the style necessitates it. But
I think the SEC Big 12 Challenge, as much as anything, too, proved to me that there's the top three, like West Virginia, Kansas, and Baylor, and they're elite.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is just kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
You know?
They're duking it out.
Right.
See,
like, they're all good.
They can be 4 or 5.
They're all good between, like, above average and good. But they're so close together that they just beat each other up. But then there's the three that are the clear-cut three.
Yeah, and look what Oklahoma State did to Arkansas, too. I mean, that's a team, you know, that's rife with talent, but they haven't been able to put it together really in the Big 12. I mean, we're going to see this. We've talked about it before. One game to the next, you're going to say, how in the world did you play this well against Team X? And then how in the world did Team Y completely handle you?
Yeah.
That's why, you know, it's – beating a dead horse, but you have to take care of home. I mean, if the Cyclones can avoid losing to, you know, maybe they drop a heartbreaker to a West Virginia. No, you hope not. But or a Baylor at home. But win all the rest at home when you know you've got a couple of very, very winnable road games, you're going to be in good shape. It's imperative that you don't have a letdown type of performance on your home floor.
So signing day is on Wednesday. Turning the page now to signing day. We'll come back to the game. I'll get your prediction at the end of the podcast. But it's not going to be a very busy next couple days as far as news, but still some potential for the Cyclones to finish strong here going into signing day.
Yeah, and I think they started strong and they've maintained it and finishing. I mean, the Khalil Rogers pickup is huge.
Oh, yeah.
as the second graduate transfer for that offensive line, and really nice looking group. And we talked about this before, the balance of JUCOs and now two grad transfers and good high school talent. These guys get after it on the recruiting trail, and they vowed to do that. They did it at Toledo, and they've clearly done it here. And as you mentioned in the past, we'll really see how they come into their own as they work on 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, I've been saying this. I think 2018, 2019, those are the two classes where, like, the jump from being, like, you know, what were they, in the 50s last year, now they're probably going to be somewhere in the low 50s to the high 40s, where you could see them get into – maybe the low 40s to the 30, high 30s range, that would be when this is. Because the last 2 years, I think people in the program have felt like they're kind of behind, you know? You've got to have – they want to be building those relationships as soon as they possibly can with some of those kids in the classes that are down the road. And now they've finally been able to do that with some of these guys in the 2018 class.
Sure, and they've you know, disavowed or the notion that you're not going to offer five-star guys, or you're not going to offer guys who have voluminous offers lists from the blue blood. You're going to do it anyway because
you never
can
know.
Get them to come in and visit, you know, top-notch facilities, a fan base that has been loyal, I mean, to an incredible degree, given the struggles in the last, recent season. So, kudos to them for that. And I think you're right. I mean, if you have the type of season that I think we both predict that they can have this year, which should absolutely on paper be a team that truly contends and probably gets to a bowl game, that helps build that momentum and that snowball effect, and more people take notice. And I think definitely tracking in a very positive way.
The offensive line doesn't really concern me that much anymore with these two guys. I mean, obviously we haven't seen them put on Iowa State uniforms yet, but on paper, this offensive line is going to be solid. And the fact that Jeff Woody said that he's not concerned about the offensive line really anymore makes me feel even better about it.
Well, yeah, and then you look at what everyone...
He told us that. Sorry, I'll say he said that in our Slack conversation. Yeah. He didn't say that publicly anymore, yeah. But
look, Tom Manning, I mean, the effect he had on guys like Nick Fett, the Shredder, Brian Shredder, a calming influence and really mentor type in Brian Bobeck last year. You had a line that everyone was asking the questions about. This is going to be the least experienced line, certainly in a Power 5 conference and in most of, one of the least experienced in all of Division I college football, and they managed to patchwork it, even through some injuries, and get the most out of guys. Patrick Scoggins was good last year. Fett was good. Shedda was good. And Bobeck was – I mean, you had steady guys. And the moving parts behind that, that was masterful. And I predict, therefore, that when you have a Jake Campos back – when you have a Sean Foster who is able to redshirt, other guys, and these two grad transfers, that you're going to see a better offensive line, a significantly better offensive line, perhaps one of the strengths of the team, if guys have developed in their redshirt years or just in another year of experience or coming off injury like Campos. And I think the future looks really bright there. I couldn't agree with you more. And Mr. Woody.
Adam Gray says this is going to be the best offense Iowa State's had since at least 2002. I don't know. I don't know your thoughts.
I mean,
this offensive line getting better just makes it even more and more likely that he's going to be right. And he said this before they even got Cleo Rogers. Mm-hmm. So I just I don't know if I'm ready for the day when Adam comes in and is boasting about how right he was. Well, because we know that will happen.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll boast. So I almost want. I mean, I want to take a naysayer's point of view on that. But I mean, again, you look at the receiving core. I mean, how much better is Hakeem Butler going to be after a year of experience? You know, we know what you're going to get from Alan Lazard. You've got productive tight ends, I think, coming into the, you know, Chase Allen.
Yeah.
And then you've got the running core. You got Montgomery. You've got Kane. You've got Mike Warren. I mean, and Jacob Parkman. Are the and how, what packages are you going to have Joel Lanning running? I mean, it looks like a pretty loaded offense.
So and you have Deshaunte Jones and Carson Epps and Matt Eaton and who else? Jalen Martin and Josh Johnson and yeah.
Yeah, there are some studs on that offense that they get room to roam. They're not getting sacked all the time. You're not getting sacked all the time at quarterback. I would tend to agree with that. I think this will be a top half Big 12 offense, and that's saying something given the offensive prowess that the Big 12 teams often showcase.
So there's only like two guys that are left on the board for Iowa State here with 2 days before signing day. I would expect that Florida receiver Tariq Milton and Cincinnati safety Keyonte Jones would be the two most likely guys to end up in Iowa State's class here with 2 days left, which would be a pretty solid finish to a good class.
Yeah. I mean, Jones, you really, really, really hope with connections and everything else. But,
I think Tariq Milton's an underrated player.
Yeah.
This is a preview of what's come on Cyclone Fanatic this week. I kind of wish he would jump into the class soon because I want to put him on my under-the-radar list that will be coming out here in the next several days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully might just he's listening.
Yeah, I might just include him anyway.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, and we mentioned the defensive line with the JUCOs, like Ray Lima and other names escaping me. It's hard to pronounce.
Matt Leo and Camilo Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
Camilo.
That could be a really good group. I mean, again, could. Mm-hmm. We talk about could a lot. And it's late January, so we can talk about it even more in the could framework. But you're seeing a real transformation in the type of athlete and the type of, you know, system that they're fitting. And I think every Cyclone fan should be excited about how it's taking shape.
All right. So, like I said, we'll have CFTV Tuesday, 12:15, talking about Press Virginia. We're going to bump on the trail back to Thursday. Adam and I have this tendency to record a podcast and then it's outdated before it either shortly after it's posted or before it's even posted. So we're going to record on Thursday.
Good
post,
idea.
Post-National Signing Day, give a little bit of a recap and get everything ready to move forward. All right, I said we were going to come back to this. Rob, prediction tomorrow night, West Virginia at Hilton Coliseum.
West Virginia has been in every single game they've played. They haven't lost a game by more than 4 points. So I'm going to go 79-75 Cyclones in this one.
I think Iowa State's going to win too. That'll probably be my pick.
I don't know who's going to be the player of the game. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Deontay Burton didn't have a pretty huge performance. And I expect good number of assists for Monte Morris, too, to keep distancing himself from the great Jeff Hornacek.
Two assists or three assists, and he will pass the great Kirk Heinrich for third all-time in Big 12 history in assists.
Sioux City's own.
Yeah, there we go. All right, thanks, Rob, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks to our good friends at Heartland Flags. You can check them out online at heartlandflags.com. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Thanks for listening.